Jerry, that's a very bad decision by Simon Harris. He doesn't have a steady hand, and today it has made too many mistakes, to my mind. He should have made Peter Burke Minister for Finance. I think Pascal is cute and is leaving the sinking ship, says Siobhan. Well, that's one way, I guess, of looking at it. With me on the line to talk about this from two different aspects now. One, from the aspect of Pascal Dunoon's strong links with Valencia, is Micheál Lynne. And we also have Brian Lucy, of course, another South Kerry man, Professor of Finance at Trinity College Dublin. Good morning to both of you, and thanks for taking the time to talk to me this morning.
Good morning.
Brian, listen, we're lining up to make applications to the World Bank for every grant we can think of here in Kerry, especially in Valencia. But look, what's your view on this move, the shocking sudden nature of it, and maybe a bit about what you think his legacy will be as Minister for Finance?
Look, you know, the amount of begrudgery that people exhibit when an Irish person does well is always amusing. He's going to one of the most powerful positions in the global economy. And whatever you might think about his domestic politics, you'd hope that somebody would do well in that position. And he will do well because he's going into something which is effectively running the World Bank. This is the job of the MD, and running it involves not just the political direction, but shaping its priorities for the future. It's always laughable when we say, the country's in a shocking state, sinking ship, etc. I mean, I'm old enough to remember the 1980s. God help us, I'm old enough to remember the 1970s. If you think this is a sinking ship, you'd want to have been on the Titanic. Yeah. That was 1978. His legacy is a steady hand. I mean, nobody would ever accuse Pascal Donoghue of being radical or being even perhaps particularly exciting. And is that a bad thing in a finance minister, that they're kind of slightly boring? You can criticise him, of course. You can criticise anybody's political legacy and his economic legacy. I mean, I think the big thing that he fluffed over the last couple of years has been the perennial issue of how do we get Irish savings into something other than just houses? And there's all sorts of innovative ideas out there in terms of looking across Europe as to how you get people to invest in stocks, in bonds, in activities other than just bricks and mortar. But, you know, that's a decision that he made, and it's a thing he decided that he wasn't going to make as his legacy. His legacy is leaving an economy that's, you know, puttling along quite okay, not immune by any means to global issues. But anybody who thinks that the Department of Finance, Department of Public Expenditure are not acutely aware of and have scenarios for situations where the reliance that we have on multinational taxation begins to decline, you know, they've never talked to a civil service. So I think he'll do okay. I think he'll do well. I think he won't be exciting. He's not going to work for Ireland. He's going to work for, you know, the Global South. The World Bank is not focused on Valencia, unfortunately. Or Iveragh. But it's focused on, you know, trying to kind of level up. And I think if you look at what Pascal Dunoghue has done over the years, and you'll get all sorts of people roaring blue shirts and sellout and all this kind of malarkey. Most Irish politicians have a pretty good understanding of inequality. Now, they mightn't be able to do much about it, but they have an understanding of what it's about. And he's in a much better position to do good things for the world in the World Bank than he is in Merrion Street. So, you know, do well and don't expect to be immune from criticism.
Indeed. Micheál Lynne, good morning to you. Tell me a bit about Pascal and Valencia. Very strong links, holidays there quite often, and spend a lot of time helping out, I suppose. I know with what you're involved in, and that's the transatlantic cable bid for a World Heritage status.
Yes, he came to Valencia a number of times. He came at least three times over the last 8 or 9 years. He first came in 2016, I suppose. And what I remember about him then was he came on his own, came in a rush, I suppose, handed a shirt in over the counter, a new shirt in plastic to be ironed. And but he mightn't have been prepared that way, but he was well prepared for what he was going to speak about, the transatlantic cable. He bought a book called From Silk to Silicon by Geoffrey Garton, and which spoke about all the great people in history, that the great achievers, and of course one of them was Cyrus Field, and he had read that from cover to cover, and he knew everything about Cyrus Field and the efforts to lay the cable. So he was well prepared, and he did promise at the time that the government would support the work needed to bring UNESCO World Heritage forward, you know.
Yeah, and that's a key thing in terms of he concentrated on. He liked the area. He came there a couple of times, Michal.
I did, yeah. I know. I remember one time he said when COVID was on, he said a journalist asked him, "What would you like to do when COVID is over?" And he said, "I'd like to be on a fine summer's day, crossing on the ferry to Valencia, and sitting outside the Ryle." With a pint of Guinness, he said, and eating fish and chips. So he liked to come.
So he came. Sounds lovely.
He came a few more times. He came in 2019 as our guest speaker for our lecture series, and again he was well prepared for that. I was lucky, I suppose, and fortunate enough that he launched my book, The Vices of Until On of the Vices of Valencia, which told the story of the history of Valencia. He stopped into Quirk's news agency in Carcavine on his way down, and before he launched the book, he had read it from cover to cover, so he had a great grasp of the history of Valencia, the great history of Valencia, before he came.
Well, I'm not sure what his leave entitlements will be like. Yeah, sorry, go on, Brian.
This is something that I think is interesting about Pascal Donoghue, is that he is a reader, and he is somebody who is interested in books, and you know, he does have a history of publishing a lot of book reviews. Now, I'm sure he's very cautious about what he says at some of them, but he does read, and he does like to discuss books and literature, and he shows an intellectual side that all too often Irish politicians are somewhat afraid of showing, that they have a life outside politics, and that they have an interest, and that they have passions beyond the political. As Michal is saying there, we forget that Southwest Kerry for 50 years was Silicon Valley. We've kind of ignored this. I mean, I grew up in the cable station in Waterville. We ignore the fact that it was the beating heart of global telecommunications and one of the most critical nexuses of infrastructure. And I think if somebody like Pascal Donoghue has an appreciation of that, even if it's only from the perspective of, that's interesting, and I had an opportunity to learn about that as Minister of Finance, as a politician, and gosh, remember that. Going into something like the World Bank, where they have an opportunity to fund transformational and transformative infrastructure globally, you know, it all adds to the kind of the picture of somebody like that.
Yeah, it certainly does. It does. Brian, what do you make of the move of Simon Harris? Tánaiste, party leader and Minister for Finance? It doesn't sound ideal. Maybe it'll work, but it doesn't sound ideal, does it?
Yeah, I kind of have to kind of check myself every time, going like, who's Taoiseach today? Because presumably at some stage. I mean, look, it's is it a sideways move for himself? I mean, I think if you were to put on a small P political hat, you might wonder, does Fine Gael not have anybody else that they would trust to put in there? Does it say something about the strength of their bench? That Harris, as party leader, said, I don't know if I want to put anybody else in there other than myself. So, you know, that's a question.
Yeah, so politically, is it a question, though? Like, this morning we're reading that government departments are to seek over $2 billion more for additional costs this year. Now, he's assessing that as Minister for Finance, but he's also assessing it as Fine Gael party leader and as Tánaiste trying to keep a coalition together. Where's the separation there, I would wonder?
There isn't any, but I mean, anybody who thinks that there's a separation between politics and policy around the cabinet table is fooling themselves. The reality is that Simon Harris is Minister for Finance today. In 6 months or 12 months or 18 months' time, somebody else will be, and the senior management of Department of Finance are well adept at, I won't say taming in a bad sense, but they're well adapted at managing the political expectations of ministers. And also, the reality is that, you know, they are the political masters of the country, and we put them in. If we don't like them, we can put them out. The minister proposes and the civil service disposes. It's not up to the Department of Finance to make the priorities. It's up to the minister. Simon Harris has been around the cabinet table seemingly forever, even though he's only 27 or something. So, I mean, he knows how everything works. And, like pretty much anybody at the cabinet, let's be honest, could be in any job and do, you know, a fair ham of it. They could do a decent job of it, you know? So, it was surprising. I wouldn't have thought that. But I guess, you know, when you're dealing with, as you say, trying to keep a coalition together, you know, the worst day in power is better than the best day in opposition. So at the first and foremost, they want to stay in government. And that's fine. That's the political reality of it. Does it say there's tensions in politics? I don't know. I mean, somebody who's better versed in politics will be able to say that. It's an interesting one.
Final point, how choppy are the waters we're heading into? The markets had a pretty bad day yesterday. Boom companies are falling a little bit.
Marcus will, mileage may vary. Marcus will rise and fall and fall. AI valuations are very frothy. It'll be grand. Don't look at the markets for today. You know, time in the markets is better than timing the markets. And we haven't had a recession for a few years, so we're kind of due one soon. That's the reality. I mean, we all get terribly kind of excited about the day-to-day gyrations of the economy and markets, but they gyrate, they cycle, they change. And it's generally speaking never the new Jerusalem, nor is it, you know, the end of the world. Blowing off some of the froth of some of the highly overvalued companies is not a bad thing. People are talking a lot about, and maybe it's a different discussion, people are talking a lot about there's going to be trillions lost when the AI bubble explodes, and what's that money going to? Well, we had a similar thing in 1999, 2000, when the dot-com bubble exploded. And a lot of money was lost, but a lot of infrastructure was created. That then, 5 and 6 years later became the backbone of the modern, more standard internet economy. The question you'd ask at the moment is, all these hundreds of billions that are going into AI, what's the infrastructure equivalent of fiber optic cables under the Atlantic? And that's a harder one to see. So, there will be a recession and it won't be the end of the world. Everybody knows the problems of the Irish economy. The biggest one is the lack of housing and no government. No government has managed to hack that since the 1930s. And it's surprising. And no government will, the reality. I mean, you could put in any collection of, to pick a random number of people from the parliament and they would have essentially the same outcome. Maybe that's just me being cynical, but,
Okay. All right. Interesting point. Brian, we're going to have to leave it there. My thanks to you as well. For talking to us on the programme. That's Brian Lucy there, Professor of Finance at Trinity College Dublin, and Micheál Lyne of Valentia Island Development Company and the Transatlantic Cable, of course, Foundation.